Yahoo Fantasy Football Forecast.
It seems like you know ball the way you talk, so.
Thank you. Someone clip that.
I'm not playing in your league unless I can draft myself.
Outside of football, I live a pretty boring life.
With Matt Harmon.
This is an anti-getting greedy podcast.
You can get on a podcast. You can get online. You can argue with the clouds. You can argue with the Russian bots. Don't care.
It's Thursday, July 27th. I'm Matt Harmon. As I mentioned to you on the last episode, we're back Tuesday with our daily schedule and a new name for this podcast, new art, new music, but unfortunately for some of you, the same old me. Not unfortunately today, though, we are joined by none other than the Hall of Famer himself, Scott Pienowski. Scott, what's going on, buddy? I feel like it's been a minute.
Yeah, it's been a minute. So we're just about getting ready for draft season. It's late July. News is coming in that actually might mean something. I mean, I'm just so glad we're away from those springtime headlines where you have to pretend they mean something. They probably don't. But teams are practicing. We're not far away from exhibition games, for whatever that means, for the 9 snaps that every important player will take. And I'm getting excited, man, because this is when we have takes, we have roster shaping, and the happiness or sadness of the next 5 months of our life is basically going to be determined by what we do in the next few weeks.
Yeah, man, it is time. Things are happening. Like, we're getting reports of people with the first team and who's, you know, we're getting the training camp videos. The last episode, Scott, actually was all about, like, do we buy into any of this stuff from minicamp? Originally, you know, part of my job as the host of the show, along with the help of Brett and Colin and Lord Podcast, when he has to fill in, of course, he's filling in again today, is scheduling people for these and like who fits best on each episode. I was like, I don't think Scott's going to be fitting best for the minicamp Mirage episode because I know how you feel about the springtime nonsense. So I am with you, man. I'm glad that we are here now in the meat of things, actually things that matter for draft season.
Yeah, I just would have eye-rolled for about 45 minutes, which wouldn't have been the best show, and it doesn't really translate to a podcast. And great to have Lord Podcast back, man. This is the original lineup. This, you know, if we were on tour right now, we could charge whatever we want.
Oh, yeah, the Sunday Night Recap crew. This was us. But I'm excited for everything that's to come this year. We've got a great episode here for you today. We are going to be recapping our very first mock draft of the season. We'll get into that, our takeaways from that exercise that we did just a couple of weeks ago. But first, as you mentioned, Scott, things are happening. We have news here to discuss. Got a couple quarterback news items here, one of which is not surprising, being that Bryce Young is officially declared Carolina's new quarterback one. No surprises there. That was obviously going to happen. I don't think we were expecting Andy Dalton to take any snaps for this team this year in a non-disaster scenario. The second one, though, Scott, Brock Purdy cleared to play. He's ready to go, according to GM John Lynch, but he is going to be on somewhat of a pitch count, taking like every third day off or everything. You know, there's going to be a pitch count here. Reading the reports, Scott, did this make you more excited or feel better about the 49ers skill position players? Or do you think this is maybe still an open competition here? What's your kind of reaction to the current state of the Brock Purdy stuff?
Well, I think if Purdy is healthy, I think they absolutely want him to be the quarterback. I also get the idea that if you made a very token offer to the Niners for Trey Lance, they would probably trade him. They can't say that, but right now he's number 3 on the depth chart. You know, the funny thing about Young, just to talk about Carolina for a second, I was shocked. I not only do I not remember Andy Dalton starting 14 games last year, I was shocked that his efficiency numbers were actually pretty good.
Yeah.
Maybe it's because Chris Olave is always wide open. Maybe that I'm sure that helps. But because I was trying to make the case of, oh, you know, Chris Olave is going to be much better off with Derek Carr. It's like, well, Derek Carr actually was outplayed last year by Andy Dalton. Obviously, football's full of context and you have to take these things with a grain of salt. But Young, look, I mean, when you draft a quarterback first overall, the sooner you feel he can start and he's not going to do anything disastrous to his confidence and his development, you have to get him in there. And it's like most things, you learn by doing things and screwing up, not by watching somebody play. So if they feel that he's not going to damage his confidence and just wreck his career out of the box and start him on opening day, then that's fine. And look, he goes into the right division, right? Probably the weakest division in football. I think all 4 teams can tell themselves a plausible story. And I've been having a lot of fun with over-unders. Like, oh, wow, look at the Falcons' schedule. Look at the Saints' schedule. Well, everybody in this division has a horrible schedule or a very easy schedule because, one, they play in division, and they get matched up with really good divisions outside of division. I think the Saints are a giveaway right now. My friend Steve Gleason was calling me to that one. The Falcons, unfortunately, have already kind of been bet down. But what I'm trying to say is I think Young is going – I think it's not a overwhelming situation he steps into. The defense, good. The division, not overwhelming. There's a running game. Miles Sanders steps in. The offensive line looks like it's credible. Why not Carolina? You can if you're an NFC South fan, you can tell yourself a story for any of the four teams that they could win the division this year. And I think Carolina certainly – I think I'm talking myself into them right now. I mean, maybe I'd be betting they're over-under or they're them to win the division by the end of the show.
No, I can get on board with it, Scott. And typically we see these quarterbacks get taken number one overall. You know, I mean, Trevor Lawrence goes to a disaster situation. The roster was barren. It wasn't until their second year where, I mean, Trevor Lawrence, besides the Urban Meyer nonsense, is thrown to like LaVisca Chenault and Laquan Treadwell at different points in his rookie season. That's not what you want to see. You know, typically these number one overall quarterbacks go to these disaster scenarios, but Carolina was, you know, it was a weak division, as you mentioned, but they were competitive throughout the entire Steve Wilkes part of their season last year. You mentioned it. We're definitely, I think, skeptical of the pass catching talent. If there's any, I just did my projections on Carolina, and it's really tough to figure out like where's the volume going to go in that receiver room. But these are all, you know, NFL players, even if I think the ceiling's diminished on them. And I think it's more important for Bryce Young's rookie season that the offensive line, I think, is not even just credible. I think it's a really good unit. I think Miles Sanders is a value in fantasy drafts right now, and the defense is good. Like, I don't know that he's going to come in there and break passing numbers or anything like that with Bryce Young just because they don't have that guy. Maybe Jonathan Mingo becomes that guy, the rookie wide receiver out of Ole Miss, but they don't have that guy right now for him to like lean on for just 120 targets off the bus, but they have a really good roster around him.
Yeah, next year you would think they would draft his running mate, right? They would love to get their version of Ja'Marr Chase. I mean, not that Ja'Marr Chase has dropped out of trees, but we know the way the college game is now, every receiver class seems so loaded. And they're
no first round pick, of course, but you know, they can try to find that kind of creative.
Yeah, that's a great point. I mean, they had the trades up so much just to get to the position to draft Young. I mean, it's a shame they couldn't keep DJ Moore, but they had to give up DJ Moore to get Young in the first place. So even though I think Young will be, I think he'll acquit himself well in his rookie year. It's hard to find. I don't see anybody on the receiver depth chart I'm going to draft proactively. I guess the bottom line is Sanders is probably the fantasy winner here. And what you're banking on with Sanders is defense good, offense, at least it can kind of stay on schedule. It won't be a train wreck. And he'll be the easiest player to project touches and probably touchdowns for. I mean, Sanders had to fight for goal line work last year because the Eagles had such a cheat code with Hurts at the goal line, and they had other backs they like to use. I mean, I think it's entirely plausible that Miles Sanders is ready to have the best season of his career.
Yeah, I've been really in on Sanders this year. That's another thing, doing the projections for that team. You think they're giving significant carries to like Raheem Blackshear or Chuba Hubbard, and I think they're gonna throw him the ball a little bit too. So I think we're on the same page with the Carolina Panthers. Just real quick, Brock Purdy, very efficient last year, right? 7.6% touchdown rate in the regular season, 8.1 yards per attempt. We know Kyle Shanahan's doing a lot of heavy lifting. We know the skill position players are doing a lot of heavy lifting there. But Scott, those guys are all going to be back this year. Nothing about that situation is going to change. Purdy, if he's the full starter the entire season, which I think is probably the case, is there anyone here in San Francisco that you're aggressively drafting besides McCaffrey? Obviously, if you get a top 3-4 pick, anyone here you're absolutely targeting with Purdy? And Purdy himself, is he a target?
Well, I'll give you my hottest San Francisco take. I actually think George Kittle is a little bit of a trap, and I'm going to argue. Mm-hmm. I know there's a tight end debate going on right now with who do you take number two at tight end? And Andy, of course, who would sell you on any Iowa player. If you let Andy on the basketball podcast, they'll tell you that A.C. Earl's going to have a breakout year this year, and Roy Marble should be, you know, one of your later round targets. But Kittle and Purdy hooked up 7 times last year for touchdowns, but so many of them were from distance, you know, 25, 30, 40-yard touchdowns. Those plays are great. They are not a sustainable business model. And Kittle is also one of those guys that I think you have to reconcile that he's a better real-life player than fantasy guy. He's one of those tight ends who said, you know, if I don't get targeted today, but I just block my tail off and we run for 250 yards, that'd be a great day. He's not going to scream and jump up and down about, I need more targets, I need more touchdowns. And we know he wasn't really a touchdown scorer until this magical Purdy to kill run last year. It sounds kind of counterintuitive. It's like, well, why wouldn't you want your player to score a long touchdown? They're just not repeatable events for most players, especially a tight end, for crying out loud. And I get it. Kittle's faster than most tight ends and all that. And he is, if you had to imagine in your mind's eye a tight end scoring a 65-yard touchdown, he'd probably be the guy you'd think of. But man, Andy's going to lose that debate. I think I'm going to win it with Mark Andrews. I know you went with Hockenson, and people could read that piece with my input next week. But I think Kittle's actually a trap, and he's somebody. He's a guy, one of my favorite players in football. He might be my favorite player in the current NFL. I'm going to be underweight on Kittle to the point that I might not even draft him this year.
Yeah, I totally hear you. I mean, Kittle said on this very podcast like a month or so ago that the reason that Ayuk's never going to have a 1,500-yard season in San Francisco with all these guys there, you know, because of the surrounding talent, you know, and the way they want to run the ball. The reason Kittle's not going to catch double-digit touchdowns is the fact they've got all these guys around him. And these guys are all on board with that, which I think is why this is a pretty special offense. Might be a little tough to project for fantasy, that's for sure. Next bit of things here, we got quarterback. We get contract news in general. I've got a few of them here to run by you, Scott. One, expected, Justin Herbert gets his five-year extension with the LA Chargers. It kicks in 2025, so two more years cost control quarterbacking for the Chargers, and they're going to need it because they've got a lot of bloated salaries on their books next year. Interested to see what their offense looks like. Aaron Rodgers, I mean, just getting a ton of praise yesterday for taking a $35 million pay cut. He signs a completely new deal, 2 years, $75 million fully guaranteed. Going to keep him in New York for 2 years. Tries to give them some flexibility, perhaps to add Dalvin Cook, who's visiting the Jets over the weekend. And lastly, didn't see this. Those two. Okay, Rodgers kind of surprising. Herbert pretty obvious, but out of nowhere, Scott, the Bears signed tight end Cole Kmet to a four-year, $50 million contract extension. I didn't have the Cole Kmet contract extension on my bingo card here in the preseason. Any like hard takeaways from these three, two big-time quarterbacks and one, you know, decent tight end there getting a contract extension?
Aaron Rodgers is moving up my board. I thought, in fact, I took him in the mock draft that we're going to discuss later, and I'll get into the when to draft him and what type of fit, roster fit he makes sense for later. But I'm starting to get the Brady vibes where it's like, okay, I need to get divorced from the Patriots. They do not have the infrastructure to support me. You know, they lose their last regular season game to Ryan Fitzpatrick. They get upset that game. Then they lose to Ryan Tannehill and the Titans in New England. They play that first week. Brady famously throws the pick six to end his Patriots career. And they have horrible skill talent. And the Packers skill talent last year wasn't as bad as what Brady was facing his final season. But now Aaron Rodgers, he must wake up every day and be like, I get to throw to Garrett Wilson today, who just is going to the moon, man. I think it's a mistake to like radically say, just slam on the table and say, I'm going to take this guy no matter what. And a salary cap draft, I'm just going to keep hitting the plus one button. I feel that way about Garrett Wilson. I have to have, have to be overweight in this guy. He was exceptional last year with horrible support. And now he has Rodgers. And look, I know you're going to get misled and you're going to lead yourself into some bad decisions if you just watch some of these videos in camp where nobody's hitting and it's they're simulated plays and all that. But I just see Rodgers having fun and throwing off platform, and he's got such an accurate arm, and he just sling it from, much like Patrick Mahomes, from any platform or any angle he can make an accurate throw. Aaron Rodgers might be the most accurate quarterback in NFL history when you factor in everything that goes into that. And Garrett Wilson could be Justin Jefferson. I think he could be that good really soon. I think he could be magazine cover boy next year. I'm going to have Jets. I don't know that I'm going to have the running backs, but I'm going to have Rodgers share. And Garrett Wilson is going to be like a top four, top five receiver. I know he's drafted probably in the top 10 right now, probably a consensus second round pick. I'm not talking you into a player, dear listener, that you didn't already like, but I think you probably should like him a little bit more than you do.
Yeah. Or at the very least, it's like, you kind of have to, you've got to be bullish on Garrett Wilson to take him, because he's going to go very highly, like you said. But I think what you're saying, Scott, is don't feel like you're projecting here, because the player is already that guy. You know, he's already good enough to be that superstar player. Like, I love the Justin Jefferson comparison. You know, I've said this before on other shows, maybe even this show, that the best note from Garrett Wilson's rookie year reception profile, Scott, was his 81.2% success rate versus press coverage. If you look at the guys that have done that since I've been doing reception perception, which is since 2014, the guys who have hit or cleared 80% success rate versus press, it's CeeDee Lamb, it's Michael Thomas, Tyreek Hill, Jamar Chase, Justin Jefferson, Odell Beckham, and now Garrett Wilson. Like, that's a pretty damn good list to be on. And now, I love what you say about Rodgers, that watching him last year, he was obviously dealing with, was it the thumb injury? He was dealing with some sort of injury, but I think the mobility has decreased with Rodgers, which is just going to happen as you age. I think really, though, the arm is completely still pretty much intact. Like the accuracy is still there. And he definitely was throwing those like petulant kind of performative deep balls at different times with the Packers last year that were just never going to work. But that's not happening in New York because he's feeling good. I think the vibes are very good around this team.
Supported by a loaded defense, too. The only thing I don't like about the Jets is the schedule is very difficult, especially the first 6 weeks of the season. Where their easy games are the Patriots and the Broncos in Denver. And then they play like every Super Bowl contender, major contender. Yeah, they play the Eagles. They play the Chiefs. They play the Cowboys. They play one other good team. It might be the Chargers. I forget who it is. But they play four of their six teams are major Super Bowl contenders. And then you get the Patriots in division. Belichick, that won't be an easy game, even if New England's kind of a middle-of-the-road team. And you get the Broncos in Denver, where they finally have an adult in the room with Sean Payton. And I'm talking myself into some Bronco takes, too. We'll get to that maybe a little bit later. But I'm going to be open-minded, maybe even proactive on Aaron Rodgers. I'm banging the table for Garrett Wilson. And I realize that is not an isolated take, and that might mean I overdraft him. And you know what? So what? I'm going to have, and you know, here's another thing with fantasy, right? We all want to win. We all want to do the shrewd thing. And we know a lot of times the shrewd thing isn't necessarily the fun thing, but you're going to have players you like too. You're going to have players you say, okay, I'm going to take a 4-month tour with this guy, most likely if he doesn't get hurt or something. I want to have a guy I believe in. I want to have a guy I like. I want to have a guy who, I don't know, just checks boxes for me. Garrett Wilson's that guy.
The Jets' first six games, their bye week is week 7.
Yep.
Versus Buffalo, in Dallas, versus New England, versus Kansas City, in Denver, which is not an easy place to play. And Sean Payton, I do think, is going to make this team better. And then week 6, they get Philadelphia in New York. That is as tough a schedule pretty much as you can draw up. But I couldn't remember the
Bills. That just shows you how hard their schedule was. I couldn't remember the Buffalo freaking Bills. So here's another takeaway, and I realize you didn't come here for DST takeaways. You can't draft the Jets defense and special teams as great as it is because they don't get the cookie matchups until December. And are you going to want to play their defense against Mahomes, against Josh Allen, against that loaded Dallas offense? No, you can't. And then week 7, you can't use them because they're on bye. And then it's like, well, do I have to hold them through the bye week? Just don't draft them. I always say you want to play fantasy football with a microscope, not a telescope. Stop with this. Oh, I'm going to dominate week 15. I'm going to dominate week 17. I want you to dominate September. And the way you dominate September, you look at the schedule and see, oh, who's playing the Texans in week 1? Not who's playing Josh Allen. Not who's playing Patrick Mahomes. That's a way to lose. I want you to dominate September. And that means you don't draft the Jets defense, period. I don't care if it's available in the last round. Oh, I'll just have two defenses and I'll ping pong. No, no, no. Don't get an extra running back. Get an extra player with some upside. Don't carry two defenses. Do not draft the Jets defense this year. You might want to pick it up. And if somebody holds them all year and they get the benefit late in the season, good for them. But please don't draft them. It's a sucker play.
Yeah, conversely, their schedule week 12 to 17 is Miami, Atlanta, Houston, Miami again. You know, we'll see where Tua is at that point. They got Washington week 16 and then Cleveland in Cleveland, which is always those like messy weather games in week 17. That could be definitely a profitable time to be playing the Jets defense. All right, let's talk a little section in the news I'm calling mysteries and, you know, contract controversies here potentially. First up, J.K. Dobbins. Ravens coach John Harbaugh said that J.K. Dobbins' situation is, quote, complicated, but the team is working through it. Dobbins was kind of surprisingly placed on the PUP at the start of training camp, despite there really not being any noise about injury issues. Maybe he's still dealing with the knee thing that he was dealing with last year. But we know he was kind of absent from minicamp, potentially because of a contract-related issue. I think Dobbins is kind of shaping up to as much. Look, Scott, I love the Ravens offense this year. I want to be like, I don't want to leave a draft without a Ravens receiver. And because I like all three of them, I'll just take my shots. I like Andrews, even if I like Hockenson a touch more. I want to draft Lamar Jackson. Absolutely. Dobbins is kind of the one guy on this offense that I'm like, yeah, shaping up to be a little bit of a scary fantasy pick. What do you think?
This is all feeding into my Mark Andrews take because I'm looking at this depth chart, Robbins PUP, Bateman PUP. I wouldn't take Odell Beckham for free at this point. I just too much goodwill has been burnt with him. And he's talking about this being his final season, which, you know, if you can retire in the NFL when you still have a high quality of life, I salute you because you should do that. But Odell Beckham has not been a plausible fantasy star for such a long time. We'll see what Zay Flowers can do as a rookie. You know, Duvernay's just a support guy. This is a team that needed a contingency plan, I think, behind Dobbins. And what do they have? Gus Edwards, Melvin Gordon, Justice Hill, a bunch of he's still in the league guys. This is setting up for Mark Andrews to have a 13 touchdown season. I love that Monken stepping in as the offensive coordinator. I think Jackson's going to have a huge year. They finally, after that, it felt like that Ravens Jackson standoff went on for like 3 years. It was only like 3 months, but the NFL doesn't age the way regular time doesn't time the way regular things are timed. That's finally solved, and Jackson's going to have a great year, but it's going to be thrown to Mark Andrews. And then maybe there's a receiver winner here. Maybe at the end of this show, you'll talk me to Zay Flowers, or you'll say, oh, Bateman's actually fine. Don't worry about it. I know we all lost money on Bateman last year, but this is a team that needed, I think, a more of a support plan behind Dobbins, and right now they don't have it.
I like Gus a little more than you, but I'm with you that they're probably could have been a better plan here, a little more depth. And, you know, we'll see what Melvin Gordon has at this point, but it won't be this show, but I will sell you on these Ravens receivers by the time week one hits. If Bateman can get off the damn PUP, that would really help. Speaking of PUP, let's talk about Jonathan Taylor here for a second. I mentioned to Kate Majuk on the last episode that, you know, Rap Sheet, Ian Rapoport, had kind of said that this was the next situation to watch now that, you know, Jacobs is not even in damn Las Vegas and Saquon Barkley is back with the New York Giants. Jim Irsay is out here tweeting about it, or Xing, whatever we're supposed to call Twitter nowadays. Jim Irsay said on his Twitter account, NFL running back situation. We have negotiated a CBA that took years of effort and hard work and compromise in good faith by both sides. To say now that a specific player category, player capital P, by the way, player category wants another negotiation after the fact is inappropriate. Some agents are selling, quote, bad faith. Jonathan Taylor's agent, that his very agent, quote tweeted that and said, bad faith is not paying your top offensive player. Taylor is currently on the PUP, like I mentioned, after an offseason cleanup surgery to the ankle injury that dogged him last season. You know, Scott, I know you were really high on the Colts last year. I was really high on the Colts last year as well. I'm high on the Colts again this year. But they're, as the agent says, Jonathan Taylor is their best player. You know, I love Michael Pittman. I think Anthony Richardson can get there. But right now, Jonathan Taylor is their best player. This is not exactly like the good vibes you want to be feeling in training camp when the owner's out here tweeting about it.
Yeah. Jim Irsay, what's there to be gained by saying all this stuff? Don't negotiate this in the media. It's kind of Irsay being Irsay. And you're right. I was high in the Colts last year and took a bath on that. One of my worst takes of the year, as they ended up having such a washout season that they basically started over. I talked about the Ravens not having a great support plan without Dobbins. I mean, look what the Colts are looking at right now. Zach Moss, Deion Jackson, Evan Hall, I mean, Jake Funk. Good luck with that. I do think Taylor's going to be fine. And look, Shane Steichen's coming in. They're getting a fresh coat of paint, new offensive design. Richardson, I think he starts early in the season. I think there's even a chance that he starts game one. I know they're not talking about that right now, but why? They don't have to make up their minds in public right now, so why do it? But with all the investment they made in Richardson, you know he's going to play early in the season. I just don't know how to handle the rest of the offense because I've loved Pittman. And you know, there's a certain receiver like Pittman and McLaurin. I feel like I've lost money on them every year. And I walk away thinking, no, Michael Pittman's a damn good football player. Terry McLaurin is a damn good football player. I'll give you another take, by the way. Don't draft McLaurin this year. Just wait and take Dotson like 50 picks later. He is like a 40% chance of being better than McLaurin anyway because he's going to score more touchdowns. And the ADB disparity is a gigantic gift to you. I hate saying to not draft Terry McLaurin. I've never said that before. This is the first time I've ever uttered those words, and it makes me kind of queasy, but it's the right thing to do. Do we forgive Michael Pittman? Can Michael Pittman survive or fantasy thrive in this offense? Because I'm nervous. When I'm drafting right now and Michael Pittman makes sense, I'm not taking him.
I did take him in this mock draft. I think that we're going to talk about later. I think one thing I keep thinking about with Michael Pittman is he's really, really good at football. I feel very good about the player he is. It's very similar with Terry McLaurin. I don't think that this offense is going to be as run heavy as people think. I think it's going to be based around the run game. It's going to be based around the quarterback run game a good bit, but they've just got too many good skill position players. You know, and I think there's some projecting here with these skill position players because we haven't seen it like all the way through, but I really like the way they're set up that I think they're going to be attacking the field vertically a little bit. I think they're going to stretch it out. Like, we might not see Michael Pittman with the same amount of catches he got last year, the same amount of targets, but we're going to see him a little further down the field. And also, really important thing I keep bringing up with Pittman, JJ Zacharyson did a great study, a great podcast episode that was a few of my like followers in Discord told me to check out about like RPO heavy offenses and how the first read on those RPO heavy offenses can just get an absurd amount of targets, like an absurd target share. And that's going to be Pittman in this offense. Like those quick hitting in breaking routes that Pittman is so good at running. And I mean, I like Alec Pierce as a vertical stretch player. I'm shifting from Mo Alie-Cox Scott to Jelani Woods now, like, because we never got that one right with Mo Alie-Cox. Let's shift it to Jelani Woods. And Josh Downs, their rookie slot receiver, like, he's going to be a stud. I think he's going to be a guy. But the first read on this offense is going to be Michael Pittman. So I could see him just with, like, an absurd target share this year. So I have been drafting him because I also do have faith in Anthony Richardson being a little bit better as a rookie than people think.
Give me a neighborhood projection for Pittman.
Ooh, let me pull it up as we're talking right now, because again, I just did this. I think he's somewhere in the range of like 80 catches, 1,070 yards, and probably like, you know, 5 to 6 touchdowns, I think.
Okay. So could you live with him as a wide receiver too?
Live with it, but you don't have to, because he's going around like wide receiver 30. I think he's more of like a high-end three that'll give you two production.
Okay.
By the way, Jahan Dotson, I love the Jahan Dotson take. I'm still drafting McLaurin because I think he's that good. I think he's like an elite-level route runner, top 10 receiver in the league, but Jahan Dotson is that good. He could be a real guy in a couple of years too. And I've always got the candle lit for Sterling Shepard, Freudian slip, because that is true too. But Curtis Samuel, love that Washington receiver course. So we're on the same page.
You know what else I love about McLaurin, and like, this is true for so many players, and there's guys that you don't even know if it's true or not about because you're just not familiar with them. But we can say unequivocally that McLaurin wants to maximize his ability. He's a really smart player. He's got an unbelievable work ethic. I got all the feels when I saw he was working with Doug Baldwin a year or two ago, because Doug Baldwin was another player who, you're in the NFL, you're super talent, but Doug Baldwin got the most out of his ability he possibly could have. And I think McLaurin's one of those guys who just every day it's like, how can I get better? How can I be a better teammate, a better leader? He's the type of guy you want to be behind. And it kills me to say I'm not proactively drafting him. I just think Dotson has the path to touchdowns that McLaurin doesn't.
Yep, I think that's fair enough. I think we're Michael Pittman, man. Just, I think he is. I really hope he doesn't go down the Terry McLaurin path. I really hope Anthony.
I'm going to move him up. I'm going to move him up, and you know, the next 5 minutes, he'll be higher on my depth chart, because that's what I come here for, right? I mean, it's under the guise of helping the listeners, but I'm really just trying to smooth out my own rankings and set up my own fantasy success, right? I'm not trying to help you, listener. I'm trying to help myself.
Well, I think we might have a pretty good discussion and potentially disagree on this next team. We disagreed on the Broncos last year, Scott, and Sean Payton, new head coach there, new sheriff in town. He was in a chatty mood. I think it was either yesterday or today. He talked to USA Today Sports. Payton called, let me just a few of the highlights from Payton's thoughts on the Broncos. Sean Payton called the work that Nathaniel Hackett and his staff did with the 2022 Denver Broncos, quote, direct quote, one of the worst coaching jobs in the history of the NFL. Payton went on to say, everything I heard about last season, we're doing the opposite. It doesn't happen often where an NFL team or organization gets embarrassed, Sean Payton told USA Today, and that happened here. Part of it was their own fault relative to spending so much blank time trying to win the offseason, the PR, the pomp and circumstance, marching people around, all this stuff. Oh man, there's so much dirt around that, Payton said about what went wrong with Russell Wilson last year. There's 20 dirty hands for what was allowed, tolerated in the frickin' training rooms, the meeting rooms, the offense. I don't know, Hackett. A lot of people had dirt on their hands. It wasn't just Russell. He didn't just flip. He still has it. This BS that he hit a wall, shoot. They couldn't get a play in. They were 29th in the league in pre-snap penalties on both sides of the ball. Sean Payton does not think very highly of what Nathaniel Hackett did last year, Scott. And I think we all, even if I was skeptical about the Broncos, I think we all underrated just how unprepared that coaching staff was to navigate this situation and to put a plan together. That was apparent within the first 5 minutes of the season last year, certainly within the first game, that end of game fiasco in Seattle. But man, I mean, how are we kind of underrating now the jump that Nathaniel Hackett, like going from Hackett to Sean Payton, is going to do for this team and for Russell Wilson specifically?
I love everything about this. I love Payton being honest. It would have been so easy to come in and be like, okay, you know, we're replacing a professional coaching staff. You know, Hackett's a very intelligent guy. You know, he'll do a great job the rest of his career. No, he didn't say any of that stuff. And he mentions, you know, how would you know a team is poorly coached, right? Because we're not in the locker room, but we get to see the games and we can watch the games, you know, over and over again if we want to. When a team gets pre-snap penalties, that tells you they're undisciplined and they're poorly coached. You know, 29th in the league in pre-snap penalties on both sides of the ball. You watched the Broncos last year and you couldn't avoid them because they were on national TV every friggin' week. I was trying to unsubscribe from the Denver Broncos all year. And they'd say, well, what if we gave them to you for free? You know, okay, I'll watch them again. They looked like they never practiced. They looked like everybody had met 5 minutes before the game. I am talking myself into Russell Wilson, maybe, and Jerry Jeudy, definitely, who was very good, by the way. His final six games of the year, he had almost 600 yards, had three touchdowns. He and Wilson got it going at the end of the year, and now they have an adult in the room. And we've seen examples of this, you know, when Sean McVay took over the Rams, or last year when the Jaguars get a new coaching staff and they broomed out. It wasn't just getting a good coaching staff in, and we know Sean Payton's a great coach, but it was getting rid of Urban Meyer, who obviously, and you, everybody knows this, was just overmatched emotionally and conceptually. Just everything, he had no idea how to be a professional football coach. Last year I was so excited. One of my worst takes, I thought the AFC West was going to be great, and I can't watch enough of these games, and I'm so glad there's so many of them are on national TV. And again, the Broncos were horrible, and the Raiders flamed out. Of course, the Chiefs are always good, and the Chargers always do what they do. And last year it was make the playoffs and blow a huge lead to Jacksonville. Let's see the Chargers are, but whatever. I want to leave you with this. I'm screwing up all my own drafts for the listeners out there. But Jerry Jeudy, man, he is a screaming get. He is the best receiver here by far. He's already done it in a infrastructure that was toxic, that was chaotic, that had all these problems. Now Sean Payton's coming in. And I love that he's taken this approach, man. And don't pussyfoot around. Don't act like last year wasn't a train wreck. It was a train wreck, and you're coming in here to fix it, and we're going to fix it. I think that's the right tone to set. And I love that he's being honest. It'd be so easy to give us the "what else is he going to say" quotes. He's not doing that. And I didn't realize I missed Sean Payton as much as I do, but I'm all in again, man. Put all these Bronco games back on national TV. I will watch.
I love Sean Payton. Love what he's gonna do here. You know, I also think obviously, like, he's got to pump Wilson up. That's the part I'm like, yeah, you know, he may or may not believe this, right? Like, he may or may not believe the stuff about Wilson, that he's fixable. But if he's not fixable, it doesn't matter to Sean Payton, because they'll just move on, and Sean is the central figure of the team. I do disagree with you about Jerry Jeudy, though. Jeudy has been like one of my biggest avoids so far in drafts, and like, I've got him below consensus just because I know he had the impressive like finish to last year, but the offense still stunk. Like, you get 100 yards and you get blown out by the Rams with Baker Mayfield 51-14 or whatever on Christmas Day. And especially because I just don't think the film backs it up. I think he's still too inconsistent of a player. I agree with you, he's the best receiver on the roster, but I don't think Sutton is just a total dud. I think he was overrated last year, but I think he's like a starting level X receiver. Tim Patrick is back in the mix. You know, he's a fine player too. You got Marvin Mims, who Sean Payton clearly likes a lot. Greg Dulcich, I think Dulcich is a guy he's the one guy I'm like proactively drafting of this bunch. If I don't get a tight end early, I'm fine taking a shot on Dulcich. You know, they threw the ball to running backs a lot last year. I think they could throw the ball to running backs a lot this year. And I also think they're going to run the ball a lot. I'm just a little worried that like Jerry Jeudy's going to come in with like 111 targets and he's still an inconsistent player, because I think they could spread the ball around a lot here. But there's no doubt about it, the ecosystem is going to be, I mean, that part I buy into is like going to be night and day different with Sean Payton in town.
But Jeudy, last year everything went wrong. He finishes with 67.972.6 on a season where they were horrible. And now they have an adult in the room. Wilson can't play any worse than he did last year. And I guess the other thing with Jeudy, and this is where whether it's Lord Podcast or the people listening will have to break the tie, is do you see him demonstrably better than Courtland Sutton? I do. And I realize you know this more than anybody. They play different positions. They're asked to do different things. They have different body types, different skill sets. Mm-hmm. But if you're going to be on my side of this, the proactive Jeudy drafter, you think, okay, there's a clear line of delineation here. And if you're not going to be on that side of it, maybe you think that Sutton's closer to Jeudy than I do. And so that's how you break the tie. I do agree with you. No matter what you do at tight end, whether you take Greg Dulcich, you go cheap at tight end and you get two guys like Dulcich, him and somebody else, and you hope one of them pops. Or even if you take an early pick at tight end, maybe at some point you just don't see anybody else you like. I'm like, yeah, screw it. I'm not letting anybody else get Greg Dulcich for nothing. I'll be that guy. He's another proactive spot player for me. But if Jeudy could go 67.972.6 on last year's Titanic, I don't see any reason why something like 1,108 isn't in play this year.
My toxic trait, Scott, is definitely that, like, I don't care about production if the offense is bad and the film doesn't back it up. And that is definitely my problem with Judy, who I think is a good player, but I think is like a number two receiver, not a one. And I think this entire group is just a little too crowded for me to think he spaced it out. But that's right. Like, the listener gets to decide, do you think that, like, my evaluation of Judy is correct, or do you think Scott's evaluation of Judy is correct? And it kind of comes down to how you view the player. And, like, he's been just such a, like, an inconsistent, hard to read player in the NFL that I'm struggling to have confidence and conviction in the player, because I still think there is a chance, as much as I like Sean Payton, like, and Russell Wilson might still be cooked. Like, it is still just that risk of it is there as well, that Payton can get, like, Jarrett Stidham is delivering all the promise that Sean Payton's offense has, you know, by the time we get to November. So a lot of risk here with the Denver Broncos, but I think we can both agree, Scott, like, the new sheriff in town is a breath of fresh air. That's for sure.
At least they're going to be fun and interesting and worth listening to and watching. And I one more thing about Payton. I know we've talked about this a lot, maybe too much, and that's on me, but Payton has an ego, and every offensive genius thinks they can fix everybody, right? And that's like a gift and a curse. You can decide if that's a feature or a bug. But I don't think Payton, and I realize, look, if Wilson's terrible, they'll move on, they'll blow it up. I get it. But I don't think Payton takes this job if he didn't think Wilson was fixable. Now, again, yeah. Sean Payton thinks he can fix anything. You know, he thinks, you know, you can junk your car, send it to Sean Payton. He's like, okay, give me 48 hours. I'll have this thing humming like a Maserati. But I don't think he would. I think, honestly, he believes that Russell Wilson is redeemable, and I don't think he takes the job without that. Now, that could be overconfidence, and maybe he'll fall on his face with that. But I guess part of my Judy belief is the idea that at least I think Russell Wilson will at least be improved. There's certain quarterback situations, like Deshaun Watson. I know he's not fun to talk about. I dare him to play as poorly as he did last year. That's why the Browns are so interesting yeah. to me, because he played like he'd never played football before. And I get it. He was dropped into a situation that and of his own doing, and I'm not feeling bad for Deshaun Watson, but it was really hard to be successful in what he was dropped into last year. This year he gets training camp and exhibition games, and he's in school from day one. He's not dropped in like some helicopter kid. Okay, make some friends. It's February. You know, so I think he has a chance to actually be good again. And Russell Wilson, I'm not as optimistic about, but the bottom line is this. I'm ready to follow Sean Payton, man. He's going to make this team good again.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we are going to recap our very first mock draft of the season. All right, we're going to be doing a bunch of different mock drafts on the website this August leading up to week one and reporting back with our findings. We kicked off with our very first one last week, a 10-team save it, a 10-team half PPR, that's of course the Yahoo standard mock draft. And as we go through the summer, we're going to do, you know, a few other formats and share what we learned along the way. Scott, I'll just start off. We'll take some of Andy's big notes from the written recap, because he was obviously the one who wrote that for the site. It is on our website. Definitely go check it out. You know, Yahoo, of course, great website. Go check it out. We'll recap some of Andy's big takes. We'll get some of my notes, I think, on my own team. But let's just start. Big picture thoughts about the draft from you, you know, your specific team. I'll tell you, I think your round 8 to 10 run was excellent. Maybe we can get into that, but just more of like wide view thoughts. How are you feeling coming out of this thing?
Yeah, Andy talked about it in his takeaways about receiver getting kind of scary pretty early. He gets late early at receiver. I think that's how he phrased it. And today, right before we started recording on this podcast, I put out my wide receiver tiers, and I also tweeted about this. I think it's imperative that you get wide receivers for any fantasy format that start themselves. This is not a position, oh, I'll fix it on the waiver wire. I'll pick up the hero that nobody saw coming. So many guys are going to get drafted. Even the players who have that upside are going to be on somebody's team when the season starts. Look at what pops at other positions, right? A quarterback can sometimes become a fantasy value because he runs, he's athletic. You know, Tim Tebow wasn't a good passer in the NFL. He was fantasy startable because he ran so much. We saw last year, Justin Fields took a million sacks. The Bears were a horrible team, but he was such a dynamic runner. He was a fantasy player. At running back, when any team has a major running back injury, the next player up, if we can get him to 12 to 15 touches plausibly before the game starts, has value. Receiver doesn't work that way. If Tyreek Hill gets hurt for the Dolphins, they don't have Tyreek Hill 2.0 stepping up. Only last year with Cooper Kupp, he gets hurt. Well, what Ram receiver do I want? The answer is none of them.
No,
I just run away from this offense. Wide receiver, and it was in this format, we only drafted two starters. So you didn't necessarily, I wasn't as attack mode with receivers. I would have been in other drafts. I actually took two running backs before I got to a second receiver, and I took Mark Andrews as well. I probably wouldn't do that in a start three receiver format. But I'm telling you, man, you got to have one of the best receiver rooms in your league if you want to win it. I'd like to have the best receiver room in my league, but if I don't, I want to tell myself a story that's like one of the top three or four. And if the right guy pops, it's going to be the best. That's where you need to bully things. And you know, what better way than to follow your work? I mean, you're in the weeds telling everybody what routes these guys went on, and you understand this stuff on a granular level more than almost anybody. But this is the position I want you to focus on. And if you want to take one early anchor back, I'm fine with that. I want you to have good running backs and good receivers. And Andy talked about it. The position is not as deep as you think it is.
Yeah, let's stick on receiver. And Andy's exact thoughts, as you mentioned, he said it gets late early at wide receiver. He wrote, it almost feels as if someone hacked the game and removed a wide receiver tier. This isn't such a big deal if you're just like you said, if your league format only requires two starting wide receivers and one flex, but deeper formats, let's say three starting receivers, two, three flexes, it's important to recognize the limits of the player pool. I think in our specific draft, Scott, to me, it right round 10 in this one is where you start to see the names. Like, you got the last guy in round 9, Jahan Dotson, who I really like. I like Jahan Dotson and Drake London more than I like Jerry Jeudy. Now, I'm not going to rank Jahan Dotson ahead of Jerry Jeudy. But, I mean, those two guys you took after, I like a lot better just as players. I love that. That round 9, it's fine. Those names there are still pretty good to me. But round 10, you know, you took George Pickens. I like George Pickens in round 10. But, like, Kadarius Toney, Jordan Addison, Treylon Burks, Brandon Cooks, Michael Thomas, Elijah Moore, you know, Odell Beckham there in round 11 now, Gabe Davis in round 11. I think there are some guys I like there as dart throws, but they are dart throws, and you kind of have to talk yourself into the positive in the range of outcomes there. That's sort of where I think the cliff that Andy's talking about starts.
I also thought it was interesting that Dalton Del Don took JSN, the hotshot rookie from Seattle, in the 9th round. And then later in that round, I got Dotson and Pickens. I would always rather have somebody who's been around the track once, who has, we know Ohio State is just royalty with receivers, and, you know, Njiba has a higher upside probably than Dotson or Pickens. But when you want to get young at positions, my goal with receivers, and I know last year we talked about this, it didn't work out because we were talking all about Bateman and some other guys, second year receivers. But if you were to say to me, oh, I'd like to have a young receiver room, I'd be like, that's great. Take second-year wide receivers. Don't take the rookies.
Yeah. Rookies are the guys I want in the back half of the year. You know, that's the profitable strategy for rookies.
This is a slow-developing Polaroid photo, right? We live in an instant world, right? You snap it on your phone, there's your picture. The rookie receiver is the photo that you get to wait 6 or 8 weeks. And in fact, the great way to play that one is somebody else drops them out of spite or their bye week hell. Nothing's happened with those guys. I mean, I remember back in 2014 when Brad Evans dropped Mike Evans, who, by the way, I wouldn't draft on a bet this year, but whatever. That's Evans. I would draft Mike Evans, not Brad Evans. I got that wrong. I would draft Brad Evans, not Mike Evans. Please get that right. Anyway.
Who runs better go route at this point, Brad Evans, Mike Evans? It's hard to say.
Just get better hair at this point. No, that's probably a wash. But takeaway, second year, please take the second year receivers and get, as Matt says, focus the rookie year receivers second half of the year. That's when it's the green light for those guys.
The guy to me this year that epitomizes that rookie, like maybe get him later, is Quentin Johnston with the Chargers, who our fearless leader, Jason Klobaka, actually took in the 12th round. I guarantee you, although his receiver core scares me a little bit, so maybe this doesn't no shots, Jason, but his receiver core, you know, gets a little questionable. But with Quentin Johnston,
he's got Chase and Olave in that's a good Deebo start. Samuel. But what are you worried about? I would have stopped drafting receivers four. After those three guys in a league that starts two.
Receiver four, just Brandon Cooks. I want a little.
You know our hot take. Four. As much as Jefferson's great, Jamar Chase. Next year we could be asking ourselves, why did Jamar Chase like go to fifth in my league or something like that? How did that happen? As he's on every magazine
cover. And I love
cover.
Chris Olave, so maybe I'm speaking out of turn here, and I'm just trying to make Jason upset when he's listening to this on like his he's trying to, you know, beat Andy Barron's mile time. But
he's trying to have a vacation, and you're giving him crap for his fifth receiver. Come on.
But seriously, I guarantee at some point, like the person that drafts Quentin Johnston the first 4 weeks, when he's, you know, I'm not a big Josh Palmer fan, but like he's probably going to be playing behind Josh Palmer just because he's a rookie and Palmer's like a vet that knows the system. But by the end of the year, he might be the one on that team because
one of their older receivers will get hurt too. And again, you know, it's different fits and different asks of receivers, and it's not always an apples for apples comparison, but yeah, you make a great point that Johnson's cadence is perfect for this. That right around Halloween, I want you to buy some peanut butter cups and see if Quentin Johnson is available on your waiver wire.
Yep, I love that call. All right, the quarterback stuff. Andy wrote a little bit about quarterbacks. You marked that down as one of your big takeaways here, Scott. I was one of the folks that went quarterback in the third round. I took the first quarterback off the board, actually, Jalen Hurts in the third round, who is going to be my QB1. Dan Titus took Patrick Mahomes right after. Josh Allen went to Dalton Del Don, the pick right after that. We got Lamar Jackson to Andy in the fourth round. Joe Burrow went in the fourth round. Justin Fields went in the fourth round. But you were pretty comfortable waiting on quarterback, and you went back-to-back Aaron Rodgers, who we talked about earlier, and Deshaun Watson, who you touched on earlier. So big picture quarterback takeaways in this draft.
Again, the 10-team format doesn't tax anybody significantly enough that you, whatever you wait on, you can still feel like you did well. Because I took Mark Andrews in the third round, I felt like I didn't have the luxury of taking another onesie position early because I needed to get that receiver room I wanted, and I also wanted some decent running backs I could hang my hat on. So, because Burrow, to me, I always love shopping just a half tier below. I'm all Mahomes is great and Hurts is great. And by the way, Dan Titus, I did a debate on whether or not to draft Hurts or Mahomes as the number one quarterback. He actually, you probably sniped him from Hurts. I think he probably would have taken Hurts there. Titus,
and then
Eagles
he sniped
fan.
Me later on Devonta Smith right before I was going to kind of like stack those two guys up. So yeah, we were going back and forth on that one for sure.
Do we agree, by the way, the Eagles unquestionably the best roster in the NFL?
Well, offensive roster or just,
no,
just
roster, just like 1 to 53.
Probably the only thing, I just have a few questions on defense, right? Like some of those young Georgia guys that they're going to have step up, Jordan Davis, N'Kobe Dean, Jalen Carter's a rookie. Like they are going to have those guys step up, and we haven't seen it yet. But I mean, the offensive line is the best offensive line in the NFL. I think their receiver duo has got to, I think they're right up there. They might not be number one, but they're definitely not number four. They're somewhere between 1, 2, and 3. Jalen Hurts is great. I think probably, yeah, still the best
you
roster.
You disappoint me. I was looking for the emphatic pound on the table. Let's make it a soundbite. And you're like, I don't know. Maybe they're good. I think, look,
old centrist Harmon.
You don't win. Yeah, centrist Harmon at work here. But quarterback, I thought all spring and into the summer, yeah, this is the year I got to be more proactive at quarterback. And then Superflex, I will. And in 12-team and 14-team leagues, I will. In 10-team leagues, you can do whatever you want. You can goof off. You can basically forget that we're drafting quarterbacks. And then, okay. Who has upside, who I can get in round 11 and round 12, like Aaron Rodgers and Deshaun Watson? And look, I realize they're polarizing guys. You know, these guys don't always win the press conference. They say a lot of kind of crazy things and everything. But Rodgers is getting that change of team at the right time. He will get dragged. The great thing about Rodgers too is just sometimes he'll throw a slant pass to Wilson and Wilson will house it, you know, or he'll throw to Wilson when he's covered and Wilson will catch it anyway. And I actually like the support guys behind. I think they brought in Alan Lazard, who's like a little binky for Rodgers at this point. They have decent backs. I'm excited about this offense, period. Watson's not a pick for everybody, but again, everything went wrong last year. He gets a full season, a full off season, a full preparation season with the Browns. And Frank Schwab, our esteemed colleague, is actually really high on Cleveland. He's a lot higher than I was on Cleveland preseason. I think I'm actually going to upgrade my expectations of Cleveland. I don't think anybody in that division is going to be bad. And I mean, I love the Bengals so much. I think the Ravens are really loaded too. So yeah. Somebody's going to go 7-10. I kind of thought it would be Cleveland, but Frank's got my ear on that stuff. I'm open-minded too, as uncomfortable as it may be. I think Watson's going to be a top 10 quarterback again. He's probably ranked as such. This isn't really a hot take, but we have to remember that when he was on top of his game, he had a shot at being the quarterback one. Now, maybe Cleveland doesn't have the offensive pieces for him to get there, but if you believe that they got Elijah Moore at the right time, if you believe that Amari Cooper still has a lot coming back, Nick Chubb is a guy I'd like to get rostered as many places as I can, as he kind of has the backfield to himself now. I don't know. I think Frank might be right. Maybe Cleveland's got that 10-7 season in them, and I just didn't see it coming a month ago.
I think that they do have the support around Watson. And I mean, like you said, it takes some projecting with a guy like Elijah Moore, but I love the talent, love the player. I think Amari Cooper, who I've always been kind of on, I think he had his best season last year as a pro, and I don't think it was even close. Love Nick Chubb. I think the offensive line, there are some questions, but I think overall it's a quality unit that's going to be better this year than it was at the end of last year. You know, a quarterback like Watson, an offensive line kind of has to take time to figure out playing with a guy like that, especially when you basically played with kind of like a statue. I mean, a huge statue and sometimes a bulldozer in Jacoby Brissett, but not a guy that's going to move around a ton. Sometimes that takes time to gel. David Njoku's good. They have depth at receiver. They didn't have depth at receiver at all last year. You know, like David Bell played a ton of snaps and like ran a ton of routes last year for Cleveland, and nobody could tell you that because he didn't do anything with them. But he's like their receiver five maybe this year, you know, behind Cooper, Moore, Donovan Peoples-Jones, and Cedric Tillman, the rookie that they drafted. More of a developmental guy, but still, they got depth there. I think Cleveland does have it. That's why I liked your 12th round pick of Watson after taking Rodgers in the 11th round, and I like that too. If you're going to punt quarterback, I do like having the platoon. You know, a few other people pulled it off. Like, again, no shade to anybody else that did this, but if I take Jalen Hurts in the third round, I'm not taking a second quarterback because I'm never going to start that guy over Jalen Hurts. Like, what is the matchup for another quarterback that's going to make me want to play him over Jalen Hurts? I don't know. But, like, Jason, again, to say a nice thing about his team, he took two and he took Geno Smith. I love that platoon. You know, that's the kind of thing of think if you're punting later for quarterbacks that you got to kind of do something like that.
Yeah, if you're one of the last teams to take a quarterback, you should be one of the first teams to take a backup. And unfortunately with Tua, I think he's a mandatory, you need insurance. I think Jason getting a proactive backup with Geno Smith, who's tied to three really good receivers, that's something you have to do with Tua, where you look at some of the other teams. Dan Harris takes Joe Burrow, no backup. Trevor Lewis takes Justin Fields, no backup. You took Jalen Hurts, no backup. I like Titus's team. He actually took Anthony Richardson, which I wouldn't have done with Mahomes, especially since he didn't attack running back that proactively. He went with a hero RB build of Barkley, and then he's got Cook on no team. Charbonnet, who's a backup. Alvin Kamara, who makes me nervous. I actually think, although I like Titus's team a lot, I think when you have Patrick Mahomes, that buys you the luxury of not having to waste another spot. You're going to play him every week. If he gets hurt, you're kind of tanked anyway. So don't take another quarterback. I get Richardson is such a fun player. And at some point in draft, sometimes you start taking guys because you just spitefully say, I'm not letting somebody else get away with this. And maybe that was Dan's thinking when you took Richardson. Awesome. But for the most part, and actually, I'm surprised Dalton for taking Josh Allen. He took Daniel Jones. It's just, again, Josh, one of the great things about taking Josh Allen, you don't have to worry about another quarterback. I would have just stocked up on another running back maybe in that spot. But it seems like most of the teams that took the vanity quarterback didn't back them up. And I think that's the correct play.
I'm with you that those two guys, that's why I didn't want to take Hurts, because like I wanted to kind of take some receiver darts because I wasn't in love with my receiver core. Like, I'm not the biggest Treylon Burks guy in the world, but him in the 10th round is fine. You know, just what if Hopkins gets hurt? He's the one. What if he takes a bigger step than I'm projecting? You know, Nico Collins. Hey, Scott, I'm all the way back in on Nico Collins. I love that. He's another guy that I got to take Nico Collins in the late round. So I don't want to be messing around with quarterback. Cause yeah, I think when you look at Titus and you look at Dalton's team, I'm a little concerned about their running back rooms, right?
Like, look at your old team, man. Cooper Kupp, Derrick Henry, dude, Joe Mixon.
So boring. I that was the first note I had about my team. I don't love the team I came out with in this draft. I'm not like doing, you know, victory laps on it, but it's got to be the most boring team of all time.
David Cooper Montgomery, Cup, who's like probably the poster child of a boring pick these days.
Yeah. Even Pat Freiermuth was one of my favorite picks in round nine. I like Pat Freiermuth a lot this year because I'm trying to avoid the fact that Matt Canada is the offensive coordinator because I like the talent on this team. He's boring. He's boring as like a breakout tight end, I think. You know, the most exciting thing is probably that I took Calvin Ridley in round five.
Talk about that, because I think he's very difficult to project off a long layoff. So talk about Calvin Ridley.
Very difficult to project. And, you know, speaking of projections, I just did the Jags projections. Like, that was the team I finished right before we started the podcast. And I think the thing, look, I'm 100% with you on that he is a difficult projection. I think when we were doing me, you, and Lord Podcast doing this podcast, you know, about like a half a year ago when he got traded at the deadline, I think I said to myself, like, I want to remain cautiously optimistic, but cautious being the operative word with Calvin Ridley. I've lost it. I've lost the caution. And I'm just optimistic now with Calvin Ridley. One, because he was such a fantastic player at his peak. Like, even in that 21 season, he was awesome. You know, playing with a foot injury in 2020. He had the makings of like the next Stephon Diggs. Like, he was that kind of separator. He's that kind of route runner as an outside receiver. Obviously, the layoff, I have no idea what he looks like now, but I'm going to say, You see him in training camp, right? Running routes next to Zay Jones, like the video that's been making his rounds. He looks great. And I do think that's important for a player like Ridley. Just it's not in-game stuff. It's not football shape, right? But the fact that all the buzz has been good about Ridley, because here's the deal. Like I have him where I like in the fifth round, if this was Calvin Ridley, 2020 or 2021 version of Calvin Ridley with Trevor Lawrence, I know that makes no sense timeline wise, he'd be my receiver like 9 or 8. He'd be with like Garrett Wilson and Amon-Ra St. Brown. Like he'd be in that tier to me. So I'm fine taking him here in round 5. And last point on this, Scott, like I think the Jags offense, to bring it back to projections, I think they're going to be super highly concentrated. We loved this about the Eagles last year, right? Where it was like AJ Brown, Devonta Smith, Dallas Goedert, and or the running game, and that was it. Like I think this offense is going to be Calvin Ridley, Christian Kirk, Evan Engram. And they don't throw much of their running back. You know, Zay Jones is going to sprinkle in there a little bit, but I think the fact that it's going to be super concentrated between those three guys means I'm comfortable at ADP with all of those guys, especially because I believe in Trevor Lawrence.
Yeah, concentrated with a potential. You can tell yourself a story that Trevor Lawrence is a top three MVP finisher, and we trust the offensive coaching, which is just so nice to say. Ridley, kind of sneaky old, entering in age 28 season. That isn't the age that we get nervous about. I realize it's a case-by-case basis, but I find myself, for the first time ever, not wanting to draft Devontae Adams in his 30s. Is there, I know it depends on every player. Everybody's different. But what's an age that makes you nervous for a wide receiver, for a veteran receiver?
It's funny, too. I'm looking at my like Terry McLaurin is also sneaky old, too, because he came into the league kind of old. He's, I mean, mm-hmm. You know, the fact he's been in the league since 2019, and right now, as we sit here, he is 27 years old. He'll turn 28 in September this year. This has to be like the oldest team that I drafted.
Jalen Hurts is demanding a newsflash. This is actually breaking news. Jalen Hurts has demanded a trade off the Mock Harmon draft team. He said, look, I can't play with these old guys, man. These guys are all going to be
boomers.
Yeah, these guys are all going to be like, you know, making Hall of Fame speeches in like 7-8 years. You know, Derrick Henry going to the Hall of Fame and Terry McLaurin going to the Matt Harmon Hall of Fame and Calvin Ridley going to the Reception Perception Hall of Fame. I don't know if they'll make the regular Hall of Fame. Cooper Kupp's kind of sneaky old too. He was 24 mm-hmm. as a rookie, right?
To answer the question though, like what's the average age of John, you monster. Gennaro, Lord Podcast, just sent me a Slack of Allen Robinson, age 29. That's when you should be nervous about a wide receiver.
I'm shocked you didn't take him in this draft. I thought you would have taken just a courtesy, you know, nod to Allen Robinson, who was,
you know, let me tell you what, if we were doing 20, like 18 rounds, when there's an 18 round draft, I will take Allen Robinson as the final pick in every round.
Take Allen Robinson. In fact, take a defense, take a kicker, take
Scott,
a fullback.
What are you going to do?
Take a punter.
When Allen Robinson has more catches than George Pickens this year, what are you going
to
do?
Pickens would have to get hurt for that to happen.
Okay.
I know you're going to tell me I'm crazy. I'm also, I talked about the gap between the Washington guys and how, as much as I love McLaurin, I want you to take Dotson. There's a lesser gap between Deontay Johnson and George Pickens, but I want you to wait it out and I want you to draft Pickens. Matt's going to tell you why that's all wrong.
I'm on the other side, he's going to be wrong though. I'm on the other side of that one, but I the fact that Pickens is now like he's a 10th round pick, I'm fine with that. Where did Deontay go in this draft? Deontay went in round 8. Yeah, I mean, he was back of round 8. Pickens was the first pick of round 10. I think that gap is appropriate, but it's pretty close between those two, and I think that's right. Like at different points in the offseason, Pickens was going ahead of Deontay, and I am on the other side of that one, but those guys, I think I'm in on the Steelers, and I hate to say that because I hate Matt Canada's offense, but I'm in on the Steelers this year. Yeah, I think with the receiver age thing is kind of like it's a little hit or miss. I do think it varies player to player, and especially the role that they're going to play. Like Keenan Allen, I think showed severe signs of decline last year, even though the box score doesn't show it. But like if he's going to play in the slot and be consistently off the line of scrimmage, I'm okay with the fact that his game has declined. But for a guy like Robinson playing X receiver last year, that's a no-go. Like, you can't do that anymore. You have to play. What I think he's going to do with the Steelers this year is like a slot guy. So it does kind of depend. But I think 29 is kind of like a good like I'm starting to think about what's the next role for this player, not the role that they played early in their career.
You know, Keenan Allen, somebody I'm not going to draft at all proactively. I might not even draft him, period. And if I have Keenan Allen on a roster, I'm going to want the rest of my team to be arrow pointed up guys, to be guys who haven't had their best season yet, because we know Keenan Allen already has. You're baking in probably two or three missed games, and he's just not a touchdown scorer. And look, a new offensive coordinator, so many teams were saying this, right? New offensive coordinator, new fresh coat of paint, take me away, make everything better. I still think the receiver who's going to define Justin Herbert's career is not on his roster yet.
I think I'm with you on that as much as I think Quentin Johnson can be a good bet this year. By the way, Keenan Allen went in round six to Dalton Del Don, which is the surprise of the century because Dalton never drafts anybody over the age of 26. And then right after that receiver run, Brandon Ayuk, Terry McLaurin, DJ Moore. I took McLaurin in the sandwich there between those two guys. Would you rather have Keenan Allen? Would you rather have all three of those guys instead of Keenan Allen, or would you rather have Keenan Allen there?
You know, Allen would fit certain rosters. Allen would actually fit, but I think actually I wouldn't take any of these guys. Ayuk is the fourth most interesting player on that offense with a quarterback they may try to hide a little bit, whoever their quarterback is. Moore, I mean, he had a touchdown problem in Carolina. That's going to get better with Justin Fields. I can't tell myself that story.
Yeah, no, I think that's tough.
Tyler Lockett went around later. I take Lockett over all those guys.
Yep. I'm with you. I'm
giving McLaurin. I'm giving you the Harmon catnip because I know you're in about for Tyler Lockett.
Yeah, what am I going to say to that?
Yeah, Tyler Lockett, man. And I know they drafted rookie receiver. You know what? They still have a narrow tree. They don't throw to their backs. They don't throw to their tight ends. All you have to do with Lockett is just go on two leaps of faith. One, and he's getting up there in age two. I get it. One is that JSN doesn't smash the league right away, which I don't think he will. And you have to take a leap of faith that Geno Smith isn't going to pumpkin. But I think he's been good long enough. Because remember, he outplayed Russell Wilson, whatever that was worth, 2 years ago.
Yep.
And then he was good all last year. They go to the playoffs. As long as you can believe that Geno's okay and that Lockett doesn't get pushed down the depth chart, theoretically, he's wide receiver 11 through 15 the last 5 years. And you're going to get him in Yahoo. I think you get to take him around wide receiver 20, 21, 22. And some other national ADPs, you can get him even like a couple of rounds later than
crazy.
That.
Yeah.
So what does this mean? It means Tyler Lockett can regress and still make you a profit because his ADP is a giveaway. All right. Is he as physically imposing and dominant as DK Metcalf? No. But again, they're not throwing to their tight ends. They're not throwing to Kenneth Walker. You don't have to worry. Geno Smith's not going to run in seven touchdowns. They got to go to somebody. Nine of them are going to Lockett. Draft Tyler Lockett, man. Don't draft all those receivers. Who would you rather have? The right answer was the guy who went around later in Tyler Lockett, who was every draft I look at, I'm like, oh, I like where Lockett went. I like where Lockett went. I like where Lockett went. And I know how this is going to happen. I'll get in the leagues I'm in. People who I'm in leagues with, they listen. They, you know, their whole goal is to screw up my draft. Forget getting their own good team. Tyler Lockett will come up. I'll have a number in mind and he'll go way past it. And spitefully, I'll get out of the Lockett bidding because I'll be locked out of a player that I like and it will frustrate me. The end.
Well, you don't have to sell me on Lockett, that's for sure. The only thing I'll add is that unlike Keenan Allen and even DeAndre Hopkins, who went one pick before Keenan Allen in this draft, there is no sign of decline from Lockett last year, like zero. He had his actually highest success rate versus man coverage and reception perception last year. Like that's, he's still playing at the top of his game. But all right, Scott,
I got to say this. You talk about old teams, Barons, who, you know, Barons, nobody will peacock a mock draft like Andy Barons, who has already declared victory in public, right? You want to talk about old receiver room? Devontae Adams, I mean, he's still great, but Devontae Adams getting old. Hopkins getting old, Godwin getting old. Good luck with those quarterbacks. His young guy is Kadarius Toney, who just seems destined to shoot his career in the foot. And then Odell Beckham, who's already looking at retirement communities. This Barons is. It's a good thing we're not playing this out. It's a good thing this team, the league, has already been deleted because Barons. Barons would be the owner and the manager in this league who would like give up on this team like a month into the season, would realize it was unfixable. He tried to trade Nick Chubb for like three pieces. He wouldn't be able to get what he wanted. And maybe Jackson gets hurt. Yeah, I do like the Cam Akers pick, actually. He was really good down the stretch last year for the Rams. I still trust Sean McVay, but this receiver room is not going to work out.
Yeah, I mean, at least he got Sam Laporta in round nine.
There you go. Yeah, imagine that. Andy Barons bullish on an Iowa tight end.
On that note, I think that's a great place to end it. But Scott, any other final thoughts on this mock draft before we close the books? I mean, apparently, according to you, mercifully for Andy, we close the books on this mock draft and we move on to the next one.
It's about a lot of your picks are going to be defined by what you can do later. And again, I talked about some situations like Washington where don't take McLaurin, you can take Dotson later. I didn't take quarterbacks because I could get them later. We talked about the importance of when you take a quarterback early, don't take that second quarterback. You're wasting your draft capital. It's almost like you're drafting backwards, right? You're thinking, well, what can I do in the middle of my draft or the late part of my draft? What's plausible and realistic there? That will define how you approach the early part of your draft. I'm going to say it again. I want you to have one of the best receiver rooms in the league. If you have the best receiver room in the league, I guarantee you have one of the major contenders in your league.
Well, hey, I'm going to sign off on that one. That is for sure. And we're going to sign off on this episode of the podcast. And Scott, we're signing off on the Yahoo Fantasy Football Forecast forever. The forecast is done. That's it. It's over. We're still obviously going to be back. But it's going to be with a whole new facelift here next week. So shout out to Lord Podcast.
We're getting the fresh coat of paint here. All right,
that's right.
Awesome.
Yeah,
awesome.
We're going to be looking good next week.
Your whole world is new. Your whole world is new. You get married. You move across the country. Now you got a new name, a new music, new art. You know, you get everything, man. You get a new hat. You know,
well,
this is everything's new for you.
No hair. So, a lot of change, but a lot of good change. And the people that listen to this podcast should be excited about the changes that are coming next week. Very, very exciting stuff. So shout out to Lord Podcast. Shout out to Scott Pianowski and everyone on the Yahoo Fantasy team. I am about to enjoy my last full weekend before moving back to podcasting every day, especially on Sundays. I mean, the podcast starts Sunday taping very, very soon. So I'm taking the Sunday off. No pod on Monday, but this Tuesday, like Scott said, new podcast name, new art, new music. Unfortunately, same old me. Whether I'm in a new place or not, and whether I got no hair, I'm the same old Matt Harmon. We have a great month of shows prepared for you all to get ready for your draft season, and this episode should have gotten you very excited for that with everything we talked about here. Keep it locked on this very feed or on the Yahoo Sports YouTube channel to check it all out. Talk to you next week. We're out.